Technology.ie. It's Thursday, July 23rd, 2015.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
This is Conor Mwinicon in the Black Knight studio. I'm on Skype with Michaela Nealon, CEO of Black Knight. He's in his office in Carlow. Hi, Michaela.
Hi, Con.
How's the weather there?
Grey and kind of depressing, if you must know.
But the news is good. We've just recorded a separate podcast, which I'll refer to briefly here. Black Knight is hiring.
Yes, we are. We are.
New jobs in technical support, part of the overall drive forward of Black Knight and expansion, and lots of exciting things going on. Let's talk a little bit about that. But you're up to 40 employees now, mostly based in Carlow.
Yeah, I mean, it's something with those things that, you know, we've always been quite careful about our expansion. I mean, we like to expand, and I love being able to say, hey, we're hiring again, come work for us, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the things I've always been very wary of is ending up in a situation where, you know, we might have overextended ourselves and grown too fast. And, you know, that's something that does worry me because, you know, you're taking on staff. It's a serious commitment.
Because let's face it, Michaela, you've bootstrapped this from the ground up.
Exactly. I mean, we started off back in, well, full time when I moved back to Ireland back in, what was it, August 2003. And, you know, we had... well, practically nothing. I was operating out of a bedroom in a house over the other side of Carlow. I mean, you know, we started with nothing. Anything we have, we've got because, you know, we just built it up from the ground up.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's something we're always very wary of in that, you know, overextending yourself because we don't have that, you know, multi-million dollar investment from whatever there. But at the same time, we're not...
There's no safety net.
We don't have a safety net, but at the same time, we're not beholden to some kind of... Yeah. You know, venture capitalist group or anything like that.
Yeah. No, it's exciting and it's good stuff. We'll post this on the Black Knight blog and on technology.ie. We'll also have links to where those jobs are going in technical support and senior technical support roles. And we'll link to the podcast interview I did with you on the specific subject of that as well. Busy times at the moment, Michaela. It's every week there are, every day it seems there are new top level domains coming on stream. We should mention .irish because I don't think we've talked about it in this podcast series, but we've gone and launched a new podcast specifically devoted to that one top level domain. I know the answer to this, Michaela, but you tell me your version of it. Why did we go and do that?
Well, I think the thing, Con, is that, you know, for us, the .irish new top level domain, it's a bit on the right of the dot. It's a fantastic opportunity. I mean, it's this way to brand yourself, your business as being Irish, being inherently Irish, that and, you know, because it's open to anybody anywhere in the world, you don't have to deal with silly restrictions. You want to register a domain name, you go to our website, find the domain you want, click, done. You know, you pay for it and you're done. And I think that's fantastic. Whereas, you know, dealing with you know, .ie, there's paperwork, there's requirements, there's this, there's that. And, you know, it makes it much, much harder for, say, an Irish expat or somebody who just kind of woke up in the middle of the night and had some crazy idea and wanted to get online in a hurry.
But there's also the idea there, Michaela, as well, leaving the restrictions on their own aside. It's really an acknowledgement of the fact that Irishness is bigger than geography, it's bigger than politics. And in actual fact, .ie doesn't really cater for the diaspora in any way, shape or form. You need to be in Ireland or have a business in Ireland or an address in Ireland or some kind of a physical connection to Ireland in order to register a .ie domain. But you could be living in Singapore, you could be second generation Irish living in Dallas, you could be whatever it might be, and you could be legitimately and validly Irish and doing something that's of interest to that wider Irish diaspora of 80 million people, and you still can't get a .ie, and even if you could, it wouldn't be of interest to that that community you're trying to reach out to. In fact, many of them would say, well, what the hell is .ie? What does that stand for?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, the beauty of the new TLDs, and we've mentioned this in the past, is the domain extension, the bit on the right of the dot, now has meaning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, the example I always go back to is when we had that chat with Kevin Murphy, must be nearly 2 years ago at this stage. And I think one of the examples he gave was .blog. You know, you go to a .blog domain, you're probably going to go to a blog. You go to a .irish domain, you're going to see something that is going to have some kind of Irish connection. Whereas, you know, .ie, it's fine, it's dandy, it's grand. But as you say, it's not open to the diaspora. It's not open to second or third generation people who would consider themselves Irish. And, you know, the thing is this, like, you go to the US and, you know, you talk to people over there and people will come up to you and they'll introduce themselves as being Irish. And you go, oh, so which part of Ireland are you from? And it's like, oh, no, well, it's actually my grandfather.
And they've never even been to Ireland.
Oh, no, they've never been to Ireland. They wouldn't even qualify for an Irish passport.
Yeah.
But as far as they're concerned, they are Irish.
And there's no themselves. And there's no question, and I think they're absolutely entitled and right to call themselves Irish. And I've said it to you before, Michaela, I know people who speak fluent Irish who've never set foot in the country, you know? And I think that's one of the most extraordinary things. One of the podcasts we featured was an interview with a man called Ona Crohur, who runs a site called bitesize.irish. There's also learn.irish, and some other people are making use of that domain for Irish language classes and things like that. There's the whole cultural aspect. There's the business aspect. There's some great generics. We featured an interview with Stephen O'Sullivan, who runs a business called printing.irish. And there's lots more other opportunities and great uses of the .irish domain as well, Michaela. Trailblazers.irish is what we're calling it. That's the podcast series. And we may as well tell the listeners of technology.ie if they want to visit that site. It's a good example, if I may say so, of a .irish domain. And we're celebrating that big, broader Irish community, because being Irish, as I say, is much bigger than just the handful of couple of million people who actually live on the island of Ireland. There's some other great ones happening at the moment, Michaela. As I say, you probably have your favourites. .love we launched recently. I think that has so much potential and possibilities. There are lots of great ones out there at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, some of them, I think, you know, some of them I look at and I'm going to go, yeah, I get that, and I like it, or I dislike it, but I get it immediately. And I think .love is one which I think, you know, it's a pity they didn't launch back in January so that it would be in time for Valentine's Day.
That's right.
But, you know, that there's no reason why you couldn't do stuff with that. We finally put live a few other ones like .christmas and .black Friday. Sure, .black Friday may not be that big over this side of the Atlantic, yet, but at the same time, it still has picked up a lot of traction here, because so many people are looking at, you know, Amazon and the other big online vendors doing these Black Friday sales. So you're seeing a lot of the Irish and European companies following suit. So if you have like a Black Friday specials, then registering a .Black Friday domain makes perfect sense. You know, it's easy to market using that. One of the ones that we added, there's been a whole bunch of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them are very, very specific. And I don't see them as being domain extensions where you're going to see massive numbers of registrations. But at the same time, they're the kind of ones that, you know, they do what they say on the tin. So, like .cafe. I mean, if you're running a cafe, .cafe. I mean, why go off and register, you know, some crazy long domain name, cafe something .. whatever, when you can just go name of cafe .cafe.
I like .club. .club is a favourite of mine. I think that's going to be really popular as well.
Well, .club is doing really, really well. And, you know, the guys from .club, who you're going to have to get on at some point, I think, remind me about that, we'll sort that out. They've been doing a fantastic job of engaging with the community. I mean, in the broadest sense. So they're talking to entrepreneurs, to startups, to existing businesses, to clubs, to associations. They're out there on the road, you know, spreading the word, getting people excited and interested in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that means that, you know, the bulk of the registrations that they have are genuine registrations. They're not kind of fluff. I mean, there's been a lot of fluff over the last year or so where, you know, some of the domain registries have tried to grab headlines by, you know, getting large numbers of registrations. And how do they do that? By discounting. And discounting down to stupidly low levels, which means that you end up with, you might end up with a very large number of domain names, but most of them are rubbish. They're being used by spammers, phishers, and other people who are engaged in rather nefarious activities. And of course, the renewal rate on them is going to be practically non-existent. Other ones we've launched, though, I think, which are specific to the people we deal with, we finally launched .scot for anybody who's got an affinity with Scotland or Scottish things, .gal for Galicia, and .eus for the Basque Country. You know, it's taken a long time for us to get some of these domain names live because it's just, you know, the integration, the technical side of things. You know, it takes time, but once it's done, it's done.
It does, but I've got to say, Michaela, the work that has been put in by Black Knight developers and that is really bearing fruit now. And I talked about this, I tweeted about it recently. I had a fantastic experience. Not only does it showcase the work that Black Knight have done in terms of allowing people to search for available domains, but it really, I think, at this stage, showcases the power of this whole new additional namespaces that have come available, because I think I said to you recently, I went looking for a domain name for my son who's 11 and who's mad into music at the moment, and he goes to a rock guitar school. He's got guitar camp coming up in County Clare next week, and it's what he's into, and he's had some great fun with that, and we've posted videos of some of him singing, and he's writing his own songs and stuff like that. It's a wonderful opportunity. It's the kind of thing that could only happen to a preteen kid in 2015, but it's how we live now, and it's great. But I said, okay, so we put a few YouTube videos up. This guy needs a domain name, because I think that way. I work at Black Knight. We think about the power of domains all the time. So I went online looking for initially looking for Cormac.Irish, which is a premium domain name. But again, first thing that comes up there is that's I can see the actual price of what that's going to cost as a premium domain name. But the other thing as well is that the Black Knight domain search engine now will give you a whole range of other options that you mightn't even have thought about. Top level domains you mightn't even have been aware that existed. And for 6 or 7 euros, Michele, I picked up Cormac.rocks, which is just the perfect domain for the particular thing that I have in mind. In this case, no need to put up a website. I put up a redirect going to the YouTube page, and it's absolutely perfect. That's a real showcase, really, of the potential that that these top level domains have.
And we're still working on it. I mean, the reality is, I mean, I'm glad you like it. That's great.
Love it. Yeah,
but it's still nowhere near where we want to take it.
Yeah,
like what we want to do is, I mean, this is something I've been pushing internally and externally for several years. Is, you know, forget about the domain extension in many respects. Forget about that. Yeah, that's irrelevant. What is it that you want to achieve? What are you trying to do? What's your goal? You know, what are you trying to highlight? What are you trying to showcase? What are you trying to market? What are you trying to brand? Mm. You know, why do you need to have this online presence? And trying to get to that, so that we're taking away some of those obstacles. And we've made a lot of improvements. The domain search lookup thing at the moment is very, very fast. It does a lookup against a very large number of domain names very, very quickly. But what we're also looking at, it isn't live yet, is we're looking at doing things like trying to help you, so I'm going to categorize the stuff. So let's say you're working in the financial services sector. You're not going to be that interested in registering, say, a dot network domain. I mean, you might be, but I can't. But you're probably going to be more interested in registering, say, a dot money domain or a dot loans domain. Maybe a dot legal would be something you're interested in. So what we're trying to do is come up with ways of kind of taking this huge number of domain extensions. We're close to 400 at this stage, and segmenting them a little so that you go along and you're going to go, right, well, you know, I'm in this particular sector, this is my area of interest, and these are the kind of keywords, concepts I'm working with, what can I get? Now, we also want to work on that a bit further and take it so that we're able to, you know, do predictions based on what you're inputting, but that's further down the line. But I mean, some of the options here are incredible. I mean, there's But, you know, say if you're a solicitor, there's, you know, dot lawyer, there's dot legal, there's dot law, I think, coming online soon, but that's going to have a lot of restrictions. But, you know, there's a whole, so many of those things there. I mean, you know, look at this, like dot catering. If I had a catering business, I would want a dot catering domain.
Absolutely,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, dot beer. Wow. I mean, come on, dot pizza. So I mean, awesome.
Dot pink is one I see here. It's fantastic. Some of the colours are interesting. Dot green, of course. Dot pink is a nice one. And dot design, dot space. There's amazing options at the moment. Michele,
the thing is, you know, it's all about, you know, the options, the choice. And if you think a little bit out of the box, and you know, the thing is this, Con. Look, you know, you try to guess your first name dot domain.
You won't get .com or .net anyway for starting.
No, you won't. Yeah. I mean, okay, you might and I might because we both got odd first names, but you know, your name's Kevin or Sean or Mary or Jack or something more, let's say, how do I say this without sounding offensive? Let's say pedestrian. It's gonna be hard. But now with that number of extensions available, it means those options are open to you.
Yeah. Without a doubt, it is very interesting, and you know, I think you've been preaching domains at me for years, Michele, and now I'm starting to get really excited because I think the options are there, and it's not domains for domain's sake. It's what they can do for getting your presence, getting your business, getting your face in the place, whatever you need to do to do that. Let's talk about what else is going on news wise at the moment, Michele. Ashley Madison is in the news. We talk a lot about security and data breaches and things like this. This one is pretty big, and not just because people's financial data has been reportedly compromised and their personally identifiable data, but it's personally identifiable in a way which is embarrassing for people and potentially very damaging to them in terms of their relationship and their family lives. Michele, can you explain to people who may not know what Ashley Madison, the website service, is about?
Well, it's very simple. I mean, it's also kind of hilarious in some respects.
Yeah,
it's one of a number. It is the biggest, but it's one of a number of sites that it's an online hookup site.
Mm.
I mean, essentially, that's what it boils down to. You want to go out and hook up with somebody, and let's face it, let's call a spade. What we're talking about here is having an affair.
It's a cheating site. And I think in terms of slogans, theirs, I think, is one of the best. Life is short, have an affair. So that's what Ashley Madison is about. And it's a dating site, I suppose, for people who shouldn't be dating.
Well, whether they should or they shouldn't is a relevant column. And that's a very judgmental thing to say. I mean, the thing about it is that it is in common with others. It's not the only one out there. It focuses on affairs. It's designed for easy hookups. It's not the only one out there. There's others out there like that focus on things like, you know, these women want to meet men and it's easy hookups and easy that. And obviously a lot of the people involved are probably going to be married or otherwise involved with people. But the thing about it is that, you know, these doing any of this, whatever the morals and ethics around it are, it's not something you'd probably want to publicise.
No, and yet it's really astonishing to consider how many actual members they are. They're talking about 37 million members worldwide. I saw something linked yesterday which suggested that based on figures Ashley Madison had published in the last few months, that they have 100,000 members in little old Ireland.
That doesn't surprise me, Carl. I mean, you know, the thing is, people have this really, well, Ireland, as we know, has a very, very strange relationship with sex and sexuality. It's you know, these are things that we're not comfortable as a country talking about. But, you know, Irish people, in common with anybody else on the planet, have interests and desires.
Really?
Come on. But you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Yes. No.
It's not in the least bit surprising that there would be that many members that might have been identified as being Irish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now the thing about this lot though is they made some crazy claims about their security about a year and a half ago back.
Yeah.
A lot about how they were much more secure than, and then, you know, this was around the same time as, I can't remember which hack it was one of the big high profile hacks. It might have been Sony, it might have been another one. But you know, the thing about security is, you know, you should respect security, you should do everything within your power to make sure that your sites and services are secure. But the last thing you want to do is to go out and tell the world that you're more secure than anybody else. Because that's just a red flag to a bull. And that's like painting a great big bloody bullseye on your back.
And it seems to be what's happened here, because judging by what the reports are, this hack, first of all, it claims to have compromised Ashley Madison's entire membership database, which it has tried to publicise and make available. There's been DMCA takedowns in relation to that. But they are threatening to make it available. And they're threatening to do so really based on a grudge, as far as I can see. They are accusing Ashley Madison of, of some questionable practices in relation to the fact that they were charging people to have their records deleted from the service, and in actual fact, they weren't. They weren't fully deleting them, they claim, and they're accusing them, I think, in a way of a certain amount of hypocrisy, in the sense that Ashley Madison has advertised itself as guilt-free. Here you go. Come on in. We'll protect your privacy. Sure, go ahead, indulge yourself. Have an affair, whatever it might be. Don't worry. Nobody will find out. But they're saying that Ashley Madison didn't really put the security in place that they should have in order to protect people's privacy.
They claimed that they had.
Yeah. And what's more, really, wasn't there, in the sense that they were charging people, I think, something like $15 to get their records to supposedly deleted from the service. Wasn't there a certain amount of blackmail involved in that as well?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I mean, several services offer you the option to remove your account. Mm. But apparently what this lot were doing is they were charging people to delete their account, but they weren't deleting the account. All they were doing was disabling us.
Yeah.
Which is, it's stupid. I mean, it's dumb. I mean, it's crazy. And you know, if you look at the original, I think the original report on this hack was done by Brian Krebs.
Yes.
So it's on the Krebs and Security. I sent you a link there, which hopefully you'll be able to link to. And Brian Krebs is awesome. I mean, he's one of these guys who does a lot of deep investigative stuff and journalism around online security and everything. So, I mean, the story he has here is, it's the ultimate story. I mean, it tells you everything you need to know about it. I mean, the reality is, you know, companies like that, you know, you're trusting them with a lot of potentially sensitive data. Mm-hmm. And if they're then not securing that. I mean, their entire business model is based around securing it, and they didn't.
Yeah,
it's worrying. Now, I don't know. I mean, the entire thing around that particular site, you know, the amount of damage and everything else that releasing the data could do. I mean, I'll put it this way: if I was married and I had an active account on that site, and I heard about that hack, I would want to get ahead of that. But I can imagine that for some people, you know, that stuff being published publicly could cause major headaches.
I can imagine that there are some very anxious and worried people worldwide at the moment, Michele. It just goes to show, really, that I would say there is no, you can assume that even with the best will in the world, there's no such thing as perfect security. In many respects, people who signed up for this must have known they were taking that risk.
I don't know. You see, the problem here with risk and what people know and don't know, you know, look, we work in IT. We work in a world where, you know, the security and things like that are things that we actually think about.
Yeah.
But the reality is that the average punter probably doesn't think about these things as much as we do.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be expected to. I mean, the reality is that you sign up with with an online for an online service, and you hand over a certain amount of data, you mightn't even be aware of how much data you've handed over or how that data could be used or abused. You know, there's a whole load of things that, you know, it's a concept that they talk about in data privacy around, it's what's called informed consent, which, so it's not just a matter of I'm giving you permission to have my data. Mm-hmm. It's much more complicated. It's a case of not only am I giving you permission to have this data, but I'm fully aware of what you could do with the data I'm giving you. And that's something which is really, really, really complex.
And as a result of that, I mean, it could be a situation where, depending how this pans out, as a company, Ashley Madison and the company behind it could be facing lawsuits, could be facing a complete business disaster here.
Well, yes and no. I mean, the reality is, you know, for a lot of these, you look what happens with some of these companies. Sure, if they're Fortune 500, they're not going to be going anywhere. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of the other ones, I mean, the reality is that you might start trying to initiate things against them, but what they could probably end up doing is, you know, shutting down one company and reopening under another company name, and, you know, you're never actually going to get anything out of them. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't hang too much on that. But it's another example of, you know, companies not taking enough care of around data and how they store it and what mm-hmm. they secure it, and the fact that they made themselves a target for the hackers. I mean, because of their things. I mean, but you know, it's the same with Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft. I was at their World Partner Conference there last week, and you know, they had all these keynotes where they had, you know, senior execs from the CEO down, coming out on stage and talking about all the latest shiny objects that Microsoft will launch. Mm-hmm. And one of the talks, Con, I was sitting there, and I was just thinking to myself, going, oh, my God, you idiots. I mean, some of the stuff that they did was fantastic. I loved it. It was really cool. And I came away from it kind of going, wow, this stuff is really awesome. But one of the things is around security. And they've basically waved a massive red flag claiming that, you know, Windows 10 is super duper secure, and when I was listening to the way they're talking about this, I was thinking to myself, going, "Well done, guys! You've now made yourselves
a target,
because by making it, the thing is this. I mean, you look at hackers. I mean, you know, there's two types. There's guys out there who hack for fun. I mean, they're doing it because they can. They're bored. They're interested in testing things out. And you've got guys who do it, you know, for money, for purely nefarious purposes. But either group would kind of look at something like that and go, ooh, so you're super secure. Okay, that's interesting. Let's test that out. And that's the kind of thing that freaks me out, is when I see companies like that. I mean, if they just simply said, you know, we've focused on security here, we've improved this, we've improved that, and not tried to make out, oh, we've now resolved all the security issues, which is essentially what they did. I was going, you've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. You're just... Are you stupid or what?
So that was last week at the Microsoft Partner Conference in Orlando. Michele, where are you off to next?
A bunch of us are off to San Diego for HostingCon.
Very good.
So HostingCon, well, the name says pretty much what it's about. It's a large hosting conference. It's always held in the U.S. The global one is held in the U.S. every year, rotates. Last year it was in Miami. The year before it was in Austin. I've no idea where it is next year. And it's one of those events which is interesting from our perspective, because it's where you see a lot of the other companies operating in our sector. You've got companies offering services, products, and other things that, you know, we might be interested in offering our clients, or maybe looking at revamping how we're offering those products and services. And also as well, because I'm on the board of the Internet Infrastructure Coalition, the Internet Infrastructure Coalition is involved in HostingCon. We're running a few panels. So I'm speaking on a panel next week about gender diversity in the hosting industry. So if you look at, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about this over the last year or two. I mean, there's an obviously a concern that a lot of technology companies are very much male-dominated. We're looking at it specifically within the hosting sector. So I'm the token male on the panel. And, you know, the kind of questions we're looking at is, should companies give a preference to hiring women or not? You know, if you're presented with two candidates that are more or less the same, should you hire the female candidate, yes or no? But I mean, the other kind of issue as well is when you see some people making these kind of wonderful statements, and I'm wonderful in between large inverted commas, but, you know, company X doesn't have enough gender diversity. And, you know, from our perspective as a small company, I mean, maybe we could be more diverse, but the other problem we have is not so much that we don't hire women, it's just that they're not turning up. I mean, I can't offer a job to somebody unless they apply for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that in itself is a challenge. So you look at some technical roles, and maybe in a large city like a London or a New York or a San Francisco or LA, a city like that where there's a much larger population, much larger workforce, maybe there are candidates. But we're based in Carlow. And a lot of the companies that operate in our sector, both in Europe and in the US, a lot of us are based outside those big cities. A lot of us are based outside those cities because, you know, we want to keep our costs based down. So, you know, it's not a case. We don't really have we don't have the same pool of candidates as some of the other companies might have. So it'll be an interesting discussion anyway, and hopefully we'll have some interaction from the audience, and if I'm lucky, I'll get booed.
All right. Michele, anything else you want to talk about this week?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks again.